Welcome back to Game Day, SportsRadio.com. I'm Mike Bernard. Today I'm joined by Scott Singer. We're going to recap the college football title game. Scott, very exciting game over in Atlanta last Monday night.
Yeah, Mike, it really was. It was one of the more exciting title games you see. You've had some blowouts in past years. Obviously, the last two were good, but you've had some of those blowouts. But this was a really good game. I think both fan bases were on the edge of their seats until the very end, and it was a exciting game for anyone watching as well.
Absolutely. A lot of disappointed Bulldog fans after having the game in hand, basically, and then losing in overtime. No doubt a tough loss for Georgia. Dog fans were bummed, but Scott, look, I think most of the nation was bummed as well. It's great for the Tide fans, that's safe to say, but the rest of the country of college football world, they're not happy. Alabama's now won 5 of the last 9 titles, and the SEC has won 9 of the last 12 titles.
Well, I can understand some of the resentment in the SEC, and I can even understand, maybe Big Ten fans being upset that Ohio State didn't get in. But at the end of the day, this wasn't a BCS committee putting two teams in a championship game. Both of these teams had to play their way in. So I think that argument kind of, falls apart with the fact that, if they didn't deserve to be there, then neither one of them would have won. And both of them took care of business in their semifinal rounds to get to this matchup. So I don't really think that there's a lot of argument nationwide. I can understand, the resentment over the SEC being there again, but at the end of the day, the SEC just had the top two teams in the country.
Well, it looks like that after the Monday night game, and this SEC run, it began in 2006. Florida beat Ohio State. The Gators started the run. They were a 7.5-point underdog to the Buckeyes in that game. They ended up thumping them 41-14. Then after that, it was LSU in 07, Gators again in 08, Alabama in 9, Auburn in 2010, Alabama in 11-12. Auburn lost in the final seconds in 13 to Florida State. Ohio State beat Alabama and went on to win it all in 14. Then Alabama beat Clemson in 15. Clemson returned the favor the next year and won it. And then this year, Alabama beats Georgia. And look, the fans, the media, they have the SEC fatigue. I get it. But back to this year's title game.
Well, that let's just touch on that SEC fatigue. If all the teams that you just listed off right there had one major component in common, and that was incredible defensive linemen, defensive ends that look like they're NFL players. And if you look at Alabama's defensive line this year, you see the same thing, real athletic, really big and really fast. And that's what you've seen in all of those teams that you just mentioned. And really nationwide, that's the one key ingredient that the SEC has that the rest of the country doesn't always have. I mean, you see some of these guys, obviously Ohio State's using that formula. Clemson has definitely found themselves a bunch of defensive ends and defensive linemen that are athletic and can run. And that's the big difference, I think, between the SEC. You have these NFL linemen that make a huge difference when they're playing any of these other offenses. And I think that's one of the keys to the success, not only in the SEC, but for any of these teams that have won championships in past years.
Right. And, as a handicapper, I look back to that 2010 championship game when Oregon faced Auburn. And Oregon was averaging about 50 points a game, 300-plus rushing yards a game. And Auburn's defensive front shut them down. And that, again, as you mentioned, all these teams, Ohio State, Clemson, all those SEC teams that won, that's the one constant that they all had. They dominated the line of scrimmage, and especially from the defensive standpoint. When we go back and look at the game, Alabama and Georgia, the first half was basically Georgia dominating. It wasn't it wasn't exciting for the fan of, if you weren't a fan of either team, but there were a lot of storylines in the game. You had Saban versus Kirby Smart, his former assistant, the Ridley brothers competing against one another, the 37-year drought since the 1980 team for Georgia. And then, of course, Saban benching Jalen Hurts and starting Tua at quarterback to begin the second half. That surprised many.
Well, I think it did, but the game looked very lopsided on the scoreboard at 13-0 at halftime, but I didn't really see it that way. I mean, Georgia was up 6-0 with about a minute and a half to go in the first half, and then they did put that drive together to cap off the first half. But Alabama misses a scoring opportunity on the opening drive. They come down, they miss a wide open touchdown. If they get that, I think this it changes things up. We may not even – maybe that might have been – that might have changed the storyline of this game if Alabama had scored in that opening drive. And but I didn't see it. When they went into halftime, I wasn't seeing it as Alabama's getting hammered. Yes, they were getting – there was equal play on the offensive lines and defensive lines, but I wasn't – with the exception of that touchdown right before half, it was a one-score game going in, you know, before that score, and Alabama was getting the ball to start the second half. So I, as a, you know, as an impartial fan watching this, I was totally thinking, here comes the Tide, will get right back in this, you know, given the situation. And Georgia, outside of that one drive, was also having a tough time moving the football.
They were, but you know, the thing that Georgia did do is they converted third downs. Alabama's defense couldn't get off the field, and Alabama's defense really hasn't been in that position since the last year's title game when they had to play 99 plays versus Clemson, and Clemson won on the final possession. And so Georgia controlled the time of possession in the game. And one thing that was brought out on several of the telecasts is all the freshmen, both redshirt and true freshman, on the field for both teams. Now, Georgia and Alabama, they're both going to lose a lot of players to graduation and some to the NFL, but there's still a lot of talent coming back for both of these teams.
Oh, yeah, and they both have great recruiting classes. I mean, I wouldn't worry about that. I think, to be honest, I think Georgia gets hit a little harder than that way because they have something very special in their backfield right now, and I don't want to take anything away from Fromm. He did a great job of managing the games this year. But the key to his success and their success offensively was an unbelievable running game, and you're going to lose two NFL backs, and that's definitely going to take its toll. And I don't know what they have and, you know, that they've recruited, and I don't know what's sitting on the bench right now, but that is definitely going to take a toll. When you have senior starters that have played and have decided to come back, that's definitely going to make a difference. And that's a lot of the success that they've had this year has been due to the running game that they've had.
Sure, and those two backs are great. They do have a great chance to play at the next level. And as you said, I don't follow recruiting that closely. I do look at the rankings. I do know that there's a handful of haves and the rest are have-nots as far as reloading. And I think we're going to find out real soon in the next year or so if Georgia is in that mode of reloading, like a Clemson, an Ohio State, you know, the Alabamas. The one thing that I'll say is Alabama and Georgia lose a lot of players. And everyone just immediately goes to that narrative of, well, they just reload. Well, Michigan was, you know, built pretty solidly by Harbaugh. They only had one starter coming back this year, and they ended up losing five games. So even the top-tier programs, at some point, they don't reload. They have to rebuild, and it may only take them a half a year or a full year. But I think that Georgia and Florida are going to be the two teams to look for in the East in the future. And then the West, you've got Jimbo Fisher coming over to Texas A&M. Auburn's got a great program. LSU, Alabama. The West is going to be, you know, Alabama will be favored to win the West, but it may be tougher than some think.
Oh, I think it's going to be brutal like it is every year over in the West. And I think the East is getting better. I think the East has a little – you have a little bit of an advantage being Georgia next year, that the East is a little bit down. I mean, Tennessee's going to be rebuilding from the ground up. Florida will be rebuilding from about the middle up. You know, Missouri, who was coming on strong offensively and probably playing the best football of anybody in the East except for Georgia down the stretch, you know, they're going to be doing it without coordinators, and they're going to be rebuilding. I know they've got a couple guys coming back that have declared they're not going to go to the NFL, and that's big for them. But I also think you know, you've got Vanderbilt, who was in trouble this year. Kentucky is a team that you might want to look at as somebody that is, they're starting to rebuild and play really well. I mean, they're starting to kind of surprise you. It's not a typical Kentucky team, but I think overall the West is much, much stronger. And now you've got Jimbo Fisher at A&M, and I wonder how long that'll take to turn that around into a national program. And you know, he'll bring some more recruiting from Florida with him, and it's gonna change things up. It's gonna be interesting to see how it all works out. You've got a lot of $1 million coaches in the West. When I say million, I mean several million
right.
coaches a year. And I think, you know, someone's got to lose, so it's gonna be interesting to see what's gonna happen on that side of the coin.
Yeah, the West is just brutal. Auburn went 10-4 this year. No question in my mind, no team has ever been as good that lost four games, because they had to go through an unbelievable gauntlet of beating number one, beating number one, and then having to go back and repeat and beat Georgia again. And then, of course, the old handicapper bowl angle of Auburn in the Peach Bowl. Look, people don't want to hear it, but Auburn did not care about putting a Peach Bowl trophy in their trophy case. It wouldn't have even gone there. It would have gone in a closet or what have you. But anyway, Auburn's going to be back. LSU did looked a little bit better down the stretch, so we'll see who wins the West. As far as, you know, one thing, Scott, I'll say this. A lot of people are up in arms, or not up in arms, but have an issue with Central Florida claiming a share of the title. As a handicapper, I do not think Central Florida is the best team or one of the top four teams, but I do believe on a given day they could beat any of those top teams on a given day. And I don't have a problem with them claiming a share of the title, because for 80 years, that's all it was a vote, a subjective vote. And if they want to do that, fine. I don't know what your opinion is, but that's how I see it.
Yeah, I think it's fine. I mean, they did kind of put their money where their mouth was. They didn't just claim it. They actually paid the coaches title bonuses. They're going to hang a banner. I mean, you can equate this. Like, you know, I went out for a run yesterday. Did I win a race? Because I was the only one there. But I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't, if I was a player, I wouldn't want to do that because we didn't actually win it. But if you want to acknowledge an undefeated season that way and pay your bonuses to your coaches, and if you want to give them rings, I don't really have a problem with that. But don't go publicly out there saying, you know, you're better than either of the teams that played in that championship game, because that's I just don't think either one of I just don't think Central Florida could have played in the SEC West this year and been, you know, undefeated like they were in the American. I mean, it's a big difference. It's at the end of the day, I understand they beat Auburn, but you know, that was a different Auburn team than the one that beat Alabama and the one that beat Georgia. And that's their injuries had taken their toll at this point. There was, you know, very little to play for. When you're an SEC team and you're a win away from playing in the playoff, and now your season is relegated to the Peach Bowl. That's just not
a knock on the Peach Bowl.
I know that's
Bowl.
Sour grapes, but it's just the truth. How do you get up a guy who's now worried about his draft status, now worried about, you know, what's going to happen? There's talk that coach could leave at that point. You know, it's just not the same as a Central Florida team that had a very special year. It was even so special that Scott Frost decided to stay, which did nothing for him. I mean, he's trying to build a program at Nebraska right now. You know, he comes back and stays for the players. It's just a big kumbaya session for UCF at this point. It's a totally different mindset than what Auburn's doing when they're just trying to get through the game and get on to, you know, recruiting and into the next year. I mean, essentially their year's over while Central Florida is playing for their own national championship. And I think it's just a big difference in mindset. If Central Florida goes to Auburn the third week of November, I guarantee you it's a little different outcome than what happened in the Peach Bowl.
Right, and you said that Central Florida couldn't go undefeated in the West. Alabama couldn't even win the West, and no team in the West went undefeated. It's apples and oranges. And not to take anything away from Central Florida, but just because of the Power Five commissioners and the Power Five conferences have colluded to, you know, create their own niche, their own little their own group in the NCAA and say, we're the Power Five. You know, look, we've had years. 2010, TCU was undefeated. They could have beaten anyone on a given day. Boise State, 06-09. Utah, Urban Meyer's 04 team, Winningham's 08 team. Look, as a handicapper, they're going to be an underdog and sometimes double digits, but they can win those games. I really hope they go to an 8-team playoff. And I understand that team number 9 is still going to complain. That's not my point. The point is you're going to have a better judge of who the best teams are if you go to 8 teams.
Well, I think one of the biggest problems that the committee has right now is half the people want language in there to say you have to win your conference, and the other half want the four best teams. And right now the language reads we're putting the four best teams in the tournament. And unfortunately, you've got, you know, five Power Five conferences and four spots. And
plus Notre Dame.
Plus this year you had two SEC teams, so you had two conferences left out. So I think that, you know, both the Pac-12 and the Big Ten are upset this year. instead of just one conference being upset that they got left out. And it's an issue. It's been an issue since this thing started. I mean, remember the year that you had two Big 12 teams sitting on the sidelines who many argued were better than any of the teams in there. And the reason was they didn't have a championship game. Well, so you go to eight teams, and I've never been a proponent. I always love the fact that the regular season is on the line every week. Something, you know, the national championship can be won or lost in September, and I love the fact that it makes you tune in every single week. Having said that, I'm not that opposed to an eight-team playoff. Now that we're at four, you know, eight, it's going to be the same thing as you mentioned. The number nine guy is going to complain. But at the end of the day, if you had an eight-team playoff, you could basically say, if you win your conference, no matter you're 8-4, 9-3, 12-0, you win your conference, you're automatically in if you win a Power 5 conference. Then you take two wild cards out of, you know, the two best teams that are left over. So if you, let's say Alabama and Georgia are 1-2 in the rankings and Alabama beats Georgia in the SEC championship game, well, guess what? Alabama is getting in as probably the number one, and guess what? Georgia is going to get in again. And I honestly think it's unfair to the bigger conferences because if, let's say Alabama and Georgia are very equal, kind of like this year, Alabama beats them in the SEC championship game, well, it's pretty hard to beat a team twice, and they're most likely going to have to play them again, and you're going to have that scenario. But having said that, I think, you know, you've got the opportunity to put five schools in, two wild cards, and then if you want to add the group of five best team, you know, you can throw that in there too to make everybody happy. But I think that it's going to be one or the other. They're not going to do anything, or they're going to go to eight. I've heard a lot of talk about six, but I just don't see how that's fair, because now you're saying one conference is better than another if you're the number one seed. Because I mean, how arbitrary is that number if you're number one or number three? You know, decides right. If you're getting a bye game or not.
Yeah, and you know, you talk about beating the same team twice. That's what Auburn had to do, and it's really tough to do, and it's really hard to do. But you said it's unfair to the Power Five conferences, but they did this to themselves. Okay, what they did this year by not having eight teams and trying to exclude the non Power Five, they call them the Group of Five. But what they did is they shut out Ohio State, Penn State, USC, Wisconsin. They did that to their own members. And that's why I have a problem with the Power Five commissioners and the Power Five conferences colluding to say, just to go ahead and claim, hey, we're the elite and we're all that matters. And I'm not saying Central Florida was one of the best four teams, but this particular year, it could be argued they were in the top eight, and they could have, even if they don't win at all, they could have knocked off a top team, and it would have been a great story, and it's competition. Anyway, I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know what they're proposing as far as a potential six team. I think eight would be great. I don't think any more than eight is necessary. There's 130 FBS teams. There's no real way to get a true champion, but if you go to eight, I think you get closer.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think you get closer. I think you kind of go between what you've got now and what the football championship series does. And we get a lot of argument on this from what they do, because you know they play, you know, four rounds of playoffs and it goes like that. But I also actually I think they've expanded that now. They have more teams in it, and I just think it takes away from their regular season. I understand that they've got guys playing from all different teams playing from all over the country, and it's kind of hard to understand who's the best, and with the geographical concerns and the lack of travel. I mean, you know, teams out of the CAA are not playing teams out of the Ohio Valley Conference, and it's just very hard to gauge who's the best conference. And you know, you see it every year. You know, everyone hands the thing to North Dakota State, but James Madison has been pretty good out of the CAA, and they play very tough games throughout the season in their conference all year long. So I think it's too many teams in that, too few teams for what we got right now. Eight is probably a good number. It keeps everybody happy, and we'll see how that goes. But the problem you have is once you go to eight, you can't come back if it doesn't work out or people don't like the angle. You could change up the way the season goes as well.
Yeah, and I think you go to eight, and I think you get rid of a lot of these patsy games, you know, the 1AA or, you know, FCS games. It's going to hurt those programs because they need those game checks. But you reduce the regular season back down to 11, and then that that ends that argument. As far as diluting the product as far as the regular season, here's my concern. I think when you look at USC the last 2 years, they went out and played Alabama in a non-conference game. They got beat, and it hurt them. They got beat badly, but they ended up being Rose Bowl champions, but not a part of the playoff. This past season, they played Texas. Texas was down, and they beat Texas and didn't get the benefit of it. So now teams like Ohio State and Oklahoma, USC and Texas, maybe after what happened this year, they're going to look at this and say, what's the point? All it does is hurt me. Because the reason Ohio State is out is because they got beat by Oklahoma by double digits up in Columbus. That's the problem I see with if you don't go to eight, because these teams, these top games that we're seeing, we're not going to see them anymore.
Yeah, I agree, and I've heard that argument. But in the Ohio State did not get in the playoffs, not because they lost to Oklahoma. They got beat by three touchdowns at Iowa, and that was the problem. That was at the end of the day, they had two losses, and one of them was a bad beat. You know, if they had just had one loss to Oklahoma, or let's say they had even played an SEC school early on, and they had two losses, they would have been in a much better shape than a home loss to, or I guess they were on the road, but a road loss at Iowa was what did them in, and that was every committee member that I heard from. That was the one thing they said, we just couldn't get over that loss at Iowa, and they got hammered in that game, and that was the difference. And, you know, they say it's not cumulative. Let's be honest. It's always cumulative. In 2004, Auburn didn't get an opportunity to play for it because they started the year at the fringe of the top 25. They didn't start the year in the top five. And that was the reason they never got up to the – you know, into the top two to play for the national title that year. And I think in the back of the minds of a lot of the committee members, they remember the shellacking that Ohio State took at the hands of Clemson a year ago. Do we really want to see that again? And they knew that they had a quarterback that was up and down. And I think the committee looks at that too. I think they look at who's there. I mean, who's playing? And I think they looked at the teams that were getting in, and they said, you know, you got two losses for Ohio State. You lost on the road at Iowa, and you have a quarterback who's up or down. And one week he's, you know, looks like a Heisman Trophy candidate, and the next week he's terrible. And I think that was the inconsistent play at quarterback, along with the two losses and the fact that the year before they had gotten hammered by Clemson. I think that put Alabama in the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree. And look, the you know, the one thing that the committee has been consistent on is if you get blown out, you're not playing for a title. And they haven't been consistent on much. Their message hasn't been always clear. In fact, it's been convoluted most of the time. But anyway, Scott, thanks for joining us. We're going to wrap it up. And thanks to all of you listening to us on GameDaySportsRadio.com. I want to thank Scott and the production crew over in Georgia. Be sure to listen to our weekly syndicated show, Inside the Numbers, where we'll preview and break down all four NFL playoff games.